Coming up on KUCB News, Russian and American scientists are working together to study how Bering Sea pollock have shown up in new places in recent years. And the Anchorage Museum launched a new exhibit celebrating the contributions, legacies, and strength of women from the circumpolar north. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Hope McKenney with some local news on Wednesday, November 18th, 2020. In a new study, scientists have linked warming Arctic temperatures, changing wind patterns and shifting currents to movement of commercially valuable Alaska pollock in the Bering Sea. The Bering Sea has seen the loss of a summer cold water barrier in recent years, which used to keep pollock from spreading out and moving north. While scientists are seeing drastic shifts in pollock movement patterns, they still don't know what that means for Dutch Harbor and its billion-dollar pollock industry. Russian and American scientists are working together for the first time to study how Bering Sea pollock have shown up in new places in recent years. By looking at historical and recent data, they've been able to confirm both a northward shift of the groundfish species, as well as a long-suspected movement of fish between U.S. and Russian waters in the past few years.
We were trying to compare what was driving those changes, and then if it was possible for some of the fish from the eastern shelf to mix with the fish on the western side of the Bering Sea.
That's Lisa Eisner, a NOAA Fisheries oceanographer and lead author of the study. She says while scientists have been surveying Bering Sea fisheries for nearly four decades, this specific study was born out of the unusual warming events they've seen in recent years, and it also drew on historical data sets from both the U.S. and Russia. Stan Kotwicki is a NOAA fisheries biologist. He says pollock generally have a north-south migration, and typically, as ice comes down from the Arctic over the course of the winter, it pushes fish south to feed in warmer areas.
And of course, then during the spring and during the summer and fall, when the ice is melting, pollock is moving back north.
But as winter's warm and sea ice melts, he says the pollock are able to migrate much further north and stay there for longer. That's in part because of a shrinking cold pool, an area of frigid water left behind by melted ice that fish don't like to swim through. Lyle Britt leads a team of NOAA fisheries scientists who do yearly surveys of the eastern Bering Sea shelf and northern Bering Sea to track fish stocks. Britt says studies like this one often worry people in communities like Unalaska Dutch Harbor, where the economy is dependent on the commercial fishing industry. He says people can interpret these studies as saying that all pollock are moving north into Russia. But he says that's not the message here. It's much more about understanding pollock movements and behavior than it is an alarm bell that all the pollock are swimming out of reach of fishing boats.
We're now just starting to fully understand really what their migration pattern is and how they interact with going into Russian waters or staying in U.S. waters, being constrained by a cold pool or less constrained when there's a limited or even no cold pool.
Britt says the change in temperatures and shifting sea life has happened very rapidly in recent years throughout the eastern Bering Sea ecosystem. And for Britt and fellow scientists, the big question is how these environmental changes will affect pollock over the long term.
Science for us is only as good as the number of observations we have. And when you've only got, in this case, of unprecedented warm, we really only have a couple of years. It's really hard to draw really large-scale conclusions at this point.
But he says scientists are planning an array of studies on how whole ecosystems are changing, not just on pollock movements, but on how they follow prey like plankton or smaller fish, and on how they interact with bird and marine mammal migrations. There will be no jury trials in Alaska's courthouses until at least January 4th. Earlier this summer, Alaska Supreme Court Chief Justice Joel Bolger said he planned for jury trials for misdemeanor cases to resume November 2nd. But in an order signed Friday, Bolger wrote that the suspension would continue due to escalating case counts of COVID-19. He also noted that Governor Mike Dunleavy's video address on Thursday encouraged state employees to work from home. There was never a plan to resume trials for felonies or more serious cases because they require more people to gather at the courthouse for the jury selection process. In-person grand jury proceedings are also suspended until January 4th, but Bolger says other court hearings or proceedings can still be held remotely through video conference or teleconference. The Anchorage Museum launched a new exhibit this month celebrating the contributions, legacies, and strength of women from the circumpolar north. Extra Tough, Women of the North, gathers artwork from women from Alaska to Finland to explore their often untold stories. Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George has more.
Resilience is a common theme throughout the Extra Tough exhibit.
I come from a long line of very strong women.
Linda Lyons is an Aleutic artist who contributed to the exhibit. Her mother's family is from the village of Karluk on Kodiak Island, survivors of centuries of colonization that started with the Russian fur trade.
You know, the story of how the women held things together while many of the men were taken off as basically as slaves to do the work, you know, for the colonizing forces, I think is an important one.
Lyons is speaking inside the exhibit. Behind her hangs a portrait she painted of Atna artist Melissa Shaganoff, posed like the Madonna, dressed in work clothes and holding a baby caribou, a symbol of her clan. Shaganoff's forward gaze is confident and empowered, the face of a resilient survivor. For centuries, the histories of the circumpolar North have been written primarily by men. Extra Tough Women of the North seeks to widen that lens with the personal stories, objects, portraits, films, and audio diaries of women and non-binary people from all around the far north. Francesca Dubrock is chief curator at the Anchorage Museum.
Part of the goal with that, too, is to really highlight the value of all of these held stories, because it's not that the knowledge doesn't exist or that these people never existed. It's just that it didn't make it into a book. And that's really one very narrow way of assessing sort of knowledge and value in our culture.
Dubrock and her team worked for a year to put Extra Tough together, trying to bridge those gaps in recorded history. Throughout the exhibit, artists tell their own stories on themes like gender as a construct, the objectification of women's bodies, and exploitation of northern lands. In one section dedicated to the labor and individual contributions of women in Alaska, Dubrock points out bootlegger turned real estate mogul Zula Swanson, St. Lawrence Island Yupik artist Florence Napak Maliwatkuk, and Tlingit Indigenous rights advocate Agnes Harrison. Then she stops in front of a 1920s photograph of a young Inupiat woman, Ada Blackjack, who was on a failed expedition to Wrangell Island.
She was the only woman and the only Indigenous person on this mission, and all of the men perished, and she survived for a full year in the high Arctic and was eventually rescued. But she is a pretty amazing story of resilience and courage.
A film by Finnish Sami artist Maria Helander depicts Sami ballerinas dancing across their ancestral lands to the steps of the Finnish parliament. It's a commentary on the political struggles of Indigenous Sami people to reclaim their land. In another area, bowl-shaped speakers set over chairs, loosely designed to feel like you're at the hairdresser, play recordings of contemporary Alaskan women and non-binary people sharing their stories and wisdom.
It takes courage to be a trailblazer, to make your own trails and follow your own music. But if you trust yourself, you cannot get lost.
Dubrock says they're still looking for stories of more northern women to include, particularly immigrants and Black women.
So many of their stories have not made it into the official record. You know, so many of these stories, I think, are still in family photo albums, which, you know, is a great and appropriate place for those stories to live. But we'd also love to share them more broadly if people would like to tell them. So,
Extra Tough Women of the North is on display now until September. The Anchorage Museum is open Wednesday through Saturday from 10 to 6, masks and social distancing are required. In Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
The Board of Education for the Unalaska City School District meets tonight via telephone conference call. At their regular session, members will be discussing after-school programs, as well as the COVID-19 Advisory Committee and Smart Start Plan updates. The school board meets tonight at 7 o'clock over teleconference. You can find the access number on the school district's website at ucsd.net or listen live here on 89.7 FM. And also tonight, we will be airing KCAW's Ask a COVID Expert Zoom event on Channel 8 TV. If you have unanswered questions about COVID-19, maybe wondering how to safely celebrate the upcoming holidays, tune in tonight at 7 o'clock with infectious disease epidemiologist Dr. Tom Hennessy. Again, that's at 7 o'clock on Channel 8 TV. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Hope McKenney, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.